Hello, this is Rabbi Eric Levy. I'm pleased to bring to you the third aliyah of the last parsha of Bereishit, Parshat Vayechi. Vayar Yosef ki ashit aviv yad imino al rosh Ephraim, vayera beinav, vayitzmoch yad aviv lasir otam al rosh Ephraim, al rosh Menashe. And Joseph saw that his father had extended his right hand onto Ephraim's head, and he considered it a bad thing. So he supported his father's hand in order to remove it from Ephraim's head towards Menashe's head. Vayomer Yosef el aviv, lo chein avi, ki zeh habechor, simi mincha al rosho. And simultaneously, that is, while he was lifting up his hand, his father's hand, Joseph said to his father, not so, father, this is the firstborn. Place your right hand on his head, clearly intending Menashe. There are a few possibilities here. One is that Joseph knows that Jacob has done this intentionally and is upset about it, reminding his father about the correct procedure, that Menashe is the firstborn. That would fit with the text, Vayera Be'inav, that something seemed very bad in his eyes, that something caught him rather wrong about the whole event. But it doesn't catch the text that we will see when Jacob responds, I know, my son, I know. Ramban says that Joseph felt it was just a mistake, that is, Yaakov was nearly blind, and that he simply made a mistake. And the question is, then why does it say Vayera Be'inav? It's just a mistake. So the Ramban explains, a very Kabbalistic idea, and of course the Ramban is very Kabbalistic, that brachot only have an effect on the correct target, that is, you have to shoot a bracha at a person who's really receptive to it. That is, a bracha can't create a talent or a promise out of nothing. I can't, you know, if somebody gives me a bracha and says, Rabbi Levy, I'm giving you a bracha that you're going to become a forward in the NBA, it's just not happening. That is, it just doesn't work because there's no potential there. But if there is potential there, what a bracha does is it takes a potential a talent, characteristic, future, and it makes it come from the potential to the real, to the kinetic, so to speak. So what Joseph was distressed about is that if the wrong bracha goes to the wrong boy, then essentially it's like shooting blanks. It's like the bracha or missing your target, and the bracha is simply wasted. And what his father is responding is saying, I know, meaning I know which bracha is best for which kid. Trust me, Joseph, I'm giving the right bracha to the right boy. Which means, yes, it's true, the biological bechor is normally the one that deserves the right-hand blessing and the non-bechor the left-hand blessing. But Yaakov is saying, this is not the case here. So, vayimma'ein aviv vayomer, yadati vini yadati, gam hu yiela'am, v'gam hu yigdal. Ve'ulam achiv akatol yigdal mimenu v'zaro yiyem melo hagoyim. His father refused, saying, I know, my son, I know. He too, meaning Menashe, the biological eldest, will be a nation, and he too will grow great. However, his younger brother, i.e. Ephraim, will go greater than he, and his offspring will be the fullest of nations. That expression, Melo Hagoyim, fullest of nations, or some such, is a difficult expression. And one possibility of what it means is that while Menashe will be numerous enough for an Am, that is, okay, a nation, but not independently enough to be on his own, separate from the other tribes. But Ephraim will be a goyim, melo hagoyim, which means equal in full and equal in number and possibly quality as well to a self-sufficient nation. Now, the strange part of it is that the tribe of Menashe is really the one that had the population explosion. If you look in Sefer Bimidbar, it wasn't Ephraim that became the greatest quantitative nation. It was Menashe easily. They grew 60% in one generation in the desert. Only Yehuda numbered more than Menashe. It's Menashe in Sefer Bimidbar that's aggressive and successful in battle and taking the future land of Israel under their leader Yair. And it is Menashe that gets the double portion of the tribal land. If you think about it, Menashe received one portion on each side of the Jordan River. So it's as if Yaakov's blessing that Ephraim should be the greater one and Menashe will be the smaller one actually didn't come about. It was as if Menashe should have gotten the bracha all along. Now, this fact clearly annoys Ephraim. Ephraim was the one who got the switched Bechor blessing. They were the one who was supposed to be with the double the double portion. They were the one who were supposed to be quantitatively greater. And it really annoys them. In fact, if you look in the book of Joshua, they complain to Joshua himself and they say, you know, it's not fair. We have this little land and Manasseh has a big land. Now, Joshua himself, Yoshua, is from Shevet Ephraim. So he's not taking this personally, and he tells them essentially to stop whining. It doesn't actually say stop whining in Tanakh, but essentially that's what he tells them to say, stop whining. He tells them to go chop down all those nice forests and trees because they have a very generous piece of land and they should enjoy it. Now, this may be why Rashi steers from translating this idea of Malo Goyim as a quantitative greatness, and he focuses really on the qualitative greatness. He says that while Manasseh would have great leaders such as Gidon, Ephraim would have the greater ones. And I would say that Ephraim actually had kings, because when the northern kingdom split away from Judah and from Binyamin after Shlomo died, it was the Ephraim tribe under the leadership of Yeravam ben Nevat, who in fact broke away the 10 northern tribes and became the king. Essentially, Ephraim became the king, at least for a while, of the northern kingdom. So they really do become sort of a full nation that's independent. He blessed them on that day, saying, through you all Israel will be blessed, as will be stated, let God make you like Ephraim and Manasseh, which of course is that famous blessing given from father to son in so many Jewish households on Shabbat. And getting back to the verse, he placed Ephraim before Manasseh, meaning either in reality, that is, in terms of who would get the greater blessing, or possibly just in this benediction, Yisimcha Elohim ke Ephraim v'chim Manasseh, with Ephraim coming first. Remember, while this blessing here is for the lads, is for Ephraim and Manasseh, it is really a double blessing for their father, Joseph, who as de facto Bechor gets a double portion, as I've mentioned before. So while it's true they're blessing the kids, it's really the Joseph that gets the blessing, because he gets extra property in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, Jacob now turns directly to Joseph and says as follows, Vayomer Yisrael Yosef, hine anochi meit. And Israel said to Joseph, behold, I am dying, but God will be with all of you, with you all, and will return you all to the land of your fathers. As I've said before, Jacob without question suspects that things will be getting very bad after he dies, and that Mitzrayim will quickly turn into a land of full exile. But eventually, at the end of that exile, there will be a redemption, a return to the Holy Land. And when that happens, V'ani natati lecha shechem echad alachecha, asher lakachti miyad ha'emori v'charbi uvkashti. I have given to you shechem, which either means the city itself, or a shoulder, or a portion, above your brothers, which I took from the Amorites with my sword and my bow, b'charbi, b'cherev shali, and b'kashti, b'keshet shali, with my bow. There's a lot going on in this verse. So first of all, on one hand, Shechem can just mean an extra portion, as Ibn Ezra says, because he gets two tribal lands, one for Manasseh and Ephraim. However, it's hard to ignore that there's a play on the city of Shechem, which is where so many of Yaakov's troubles in the history of the Jews have focused. It's not just the pillaging of the city by Shimon and Levi after the rape of Dinah. But if you remember, that's where the brothers were supposed to be shepherding their flocks right before they sold Joseph. Joseph is tied to that city because he went to that city, and in that city, he gets lost. And he has this strange incident where he meets an unknown man who helps him find his brothers, and in addition helps him find his own doom, which is immediately to the north of Shechem. That's where he finds his brothers in Dotan, and then finds his doom as well. It's important to note also that the city of Shechem is in fact on the border between the adjacent territories of Manasseh and Ephraim. It's really the city that connects Manasseh and Ephraim. And that was no doubt intentionally. For whatever reason, there may have been things that happened in the Torah things that happened to Yaakov and Shechem that we just don't know about. And what's interesting is we actually find out something new here that we were simply not aware of, something that happened in Shechem that we weren't aware of. And for whatever reason, this is important to Yaakov, and he gives that piece of property on top of everything to Joseph, or really Joseph's children. So what I'm referring to is that there's this seemingly illogical sequence of events in the Torah, which is After the brothers killed the men of Shechem, it says that God put a powerful fear on the people around Shechem in order to give time for Jacob to make an escape to Beit El. And what that means is, had God not caused this fear to descend on the surrounding cities and city-states, they would have torn the Jewish tribe, or I should say the Jacobian or the Israelite tribe, to pieces. So if that's true, that if Shechem or whatever was left of it and all of the cities around it have a deep enmity to Jacob, how is it possible that the brothers are casually grazing their flocks in Shechem, who knows, maybe just years later? What changed that the land has now become so safe that the Israelites could walk around in Shechem without any problem? Now, most people are familiar with Rashi's Midrash, which reads the words b'charpi u'v'kashti in this pasuk as not meaning a literal sword or a bow, but it means intellectual sharpness, b'charpi, with my sharpness, and bakashati, with my prayers, which means it's not b'kashti, but it's read as u'v'kashati, which is of course not how it's written in the Torah, but that's the way it's interpreted. Now that medrash means that essentially he achieved something through prayer and through learning of Torah. But it's clear that the plain sense is that Jacob is relating a battle, that he took Shechem with his sword and with his bow, and it is a battle that is not mentioned heretofore in the Torah. And that's because the Torah is not a history book. Jacob, obviously, or it seems to me, and it makes sense later when they feel comfortable walking around through the streets of Shechem or shepherding their flocks in their territory, it seems clear that when Jacob was strong enough, he went back to Shechem, who was without question his proven enemy after what they did to them, and instead of being able to make peace with them, because who would ever make a peace treaty with the Israelites again, considering what they did in Shechem last time, Jacob was forced to take the city and its surrounding countryside by force. He had no choice. He would have liked to do it by peace, but he had no choice to do it by force. That portion of land that he was forced to fight for, thanks to what Shimon and Levi did, he gave specifically to Joseph, because he had to earn that territory harder than any other territory in Israel itself. Now, Ibn Ezra doesn't like that. He doesn't want to say that there's some kind of past war which took place sometime and it wasn't recorded. So what he says is, read this as a future tense. He doesn't say that it's my prayers and my learning of Torah. He says there was a conquest, but it's referring to a future conquest, even though it's in the past tense. It means there's a prophecy in the future Joshua will be able to win this land. The only problem is, Joshua records no such conquest of Shechem. And in fact, the territory is so safe that as soon as Joshua's conquered Jericho, he goes up to Shechem for a rededication of the Torah. He puts half the tribes on Har Ebal and Har and half Gerizim. It looks like Shechem is completely peaceful territory. So how did it get peaceful? To me, it seems quite clear. There was an unrecorded event in the Torah that happened during the 70 years that Jacob spent in Canaan, and not everything that happened during those 70 years is recorded. One of those things was the fact that Jacob had to, with his sweat and his blood and his sword and his bow, had to unfortunately reconquer the city-state of Shechem, which should have been able to make peace with. And now that he had to fight for it, he's going to bequeath it to Joseph as a portion which is on and beyond what he'll be giving his brothers and Joseph himself in the next chapters when we get to the actual blessings of the brothers.